Hey everyone, welcome to Guards of Eden. Today's guest is Amy Damone. I was introduced to Amy through her mental health podcast, which is called What We're Not Talking About. And the thing that I was really drawn to was Amy's capacity and ability to be empathetic, to also be vulnerable whilst just having this emotional intelligence that I was really, really drawn to. She's a fantastic host, not only as an interviewer and as someone in conversation, but also with her solo episode, which I really enjoyed too. Amy covers her story in this episode, which has many different themes of mental health topics that not only was I highly appreciative of her contribution, but also just her ability to potentially change my perception of mental health topics and also just give me a unique insight and give you, the listener, a unique insight potentially of many different themes, whether it's addiction, whether it's non-binary thinking, and just seeing what she's built over her time and what she's battled through throughout her life. It leads to this amazing conversation. I really, really enjoyed it. Amy's awesome, so please check her out in the show notes and what she's got going on. If you're listening to this on Apple, it'd be amazing if you could leave a rating or a review. If not, if you can subscribe, that'd be fantastic too. But I just think you're going to really enjoy this episode. It's a conversation that I just really appreciated being a small part of, and just extremely grateful for Amy's insight and ability to be vulnerable with her own story. And yeah, it was just a conversation I really enjoyed. So without further ado, 3, 2, 1, let's go. Hey Amy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. And I'm happy that this conversation's happening. I can't wait for everyone to hear your story. So Amy, first question. I have a Spotify playlist, which is for every guest gives me one contribution to it. First of all, the playlist is called the Guards of Eden soundtrack, and it is a song that makes the person happy or reminds them of a positive memory. So I was wondering, can you give me a song that reminds you of a positive memory or just makes you feel good?
Yes, absolutely. So I love the song Jungle by the X-Ambassadors. Yeah, it's a good one. I call it my mic drop song.
I love that. That's brilliant. And that'll be your contribution. So that now lives on the Guards of Eden soundtrack Spotify playlist, which lives in the show notes for those of you listening. So Amy, how do you remember your childhood growing up, and what was a young Amy like growing up?
So my childhood was, the best way to describe it was anxious. I was a pretty anxious kid, like a very anxious kid. So that was what most of my childhood was like. And like, obviously there was bits and pieces where it was really fun and exciting, but overall, yeah, just like straight up anxious. Simple as that.
Yeah. One thing that you did say about growing up was the idea of being someone that was quite sick a lot, whether it was physically or mentally. And it just led me to believe, well, it didn't lead me to believe, it led me to being curious of the idea of, do you feel like it led to misconceptions or misjudgments placed on you growing up? Because I think when someone's maybe sick quite consistently, you get like these labels of, I don't know, being dramatic or too sensitive or all these different things. And I think, especially if it's challenging for a person to see the sickness, it can be, as a kid, you can be, yeah, labeled as like over dramatic or like, yeah, just being too sensitive. And I was wondering, because you were someone that did experience like illness growing up quite a lot, did it lead to this idea of misconceptions and misjudgments placed on you?
Yes, absolutely it did. I know there's a lot of, maybe not a lot of, but many beliefs inside my head about being too much, or just as if I was just, again, like too much to deal with, just too much anything. And I was an only child. So luckily for me, it didn't come from my parents necessarily. It came more from friends and teachers and people that were part of my life outside of my immediate family. That being said, like, I do believe that some of my or not some of my parents, my two parents, did get a little like, not annoyed, but like my mom was very concerned and my father had a lot going on himself. So I think he was just like, oh my God, I'm sick. She's sick. Like, and it just created this more, not so much like attitude specifically towards me, but it was more like this, the family dynamic was just like always stressed or always, like sick, I guess. And I think for me, like what really made it worse was that I knew that there was something that couldn't be quantified by like medicine or like that way. Not in the way that, I mean, as a child, I mean, now I realize that it can be, but I was like going to a doctor all the time. So I was always like, this is sick. And I feel this way and this way. And it was always like, okay, this is what's wrong from a physical perspective. And there was never any psychological attention. And I think that just made that psychological belief system that was implemented by accident into me that much worse.
Yes. I just find it so interesting because, it ends up becoming a little bit like a self-fulfilling prophecy, this idea of feeling sick and feeling anxious and then people being like, oh, you're just too much. And then it ends up being like it snowballs, this idea of it actually doesn't, it doesn't help you at all when people are anxious around you. It ends up exacerbating like everything that you've gone through growing up, I'd imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like so childish, and this is probably like an indication that I still have a little bit of healing to do around this, but it's just annoying, you know, like it was just super annoying for me to have to process that, especially because I know how it affected me in the long run and why, like, because I took on that similar belief that like, okay, maybe this isn't it. Maybe it is all in my head. Maybe it's this, this, and this. So I allowed the healthiness or like the normality, I guess, of life to be my identity when in fact it was more like, no, you're mentally, you're not well right now. And because of that, I tried to do things and participate in a way that didn't show like my negative patterns and things like that. And it just ended up destroying me because I was just allowing so many other people to tell me how it was when that wasn't my reality. And like, I mean, we all experience that throughout all of our lives. So I don't want to take that away from anyone else. And it's not like mine was that much more. I just have like an awareness of it because of like unpacking it for so long that it's just like crazy how much we are just indoctrinated into these beliefs because of people's like misconceptions about someone else's situations.
Yeah. And it leads me onto my next question quite nicely, that answer, which I really appreciate just the answer in general. But you're someone now that you've been on, you know, numerous podcasts as a guest. You've got your own podcast where you're very open. I think my initial kind of, I'm not going to say judgment, but maybe assessment of like who you are is this idea of you being very open. And because you've done the work in terms of therapy and really unpacking a lot of like what's happened, there's a great sense of awareness and like real, I think with that awareness comes like a freedom of speech, this comfort of speaking about what kind of has happened in your life. And I was wondering, how have you found being vocal about your childhood and kind of the trials and tribulations that have been around it? And how is it being received by like family members or friends of yours or all these different things? Because you've been so open about your journey and just unapologetic about like things that maybe could have been improved just because it's something you've worked on and have an awareness of. So yeah, how has it been received and how have you found the feedback of you being so open about your life and your childhood in particular?
Great question. I will be honest with you. My disclosure or my openness was really at the beginning a defense mechanism. It was that if I tell literally pretty much anyone I meet all these things about my life, then they cannot use it against me. And it became like my armor for a very long period of time. Luckily, it was the catalyst to help me unpack it, because I was openly talking about this and I would hear myself talk about these situations. Some of them very normal teenage, young adult stuff, some not. And I remember just being like the observer of what was happening. And I was just like, what the fuck? Yeah. And like, I didn't necessarily respond to my friends I was talking to or who I was talking to about it like that right then and there. But it just became like a regular thing. So whenever I was found myself maybe talking too much about something, I was like, oh my God, what is happening? And just over and over, I eventually realized that this is actually really helping me talking about it and expressing it in ways that, you know, maybe it was super judgmental at one point, and then it transforms into something more tolerable, and then you move it to something accepting and forgiveness. And there's all these different spectrums that you end up going through when you process these past events. And it's so wonderful now for me to be able to talk about it in a way that feels like me and not like I'm trying to fit within a box. Because even when you talk about mental illness, especially when it comes to recovery, you don't like, there's a lot of communities that like don't want to hear that I smoke weed every day because it takes away from all the other stuff in their eyes. But that's like a misconception to them. And that doesn't mean that I don't maybe need to scale back. That doesn't mean like that there's not always like it's this or that. But I think because we have this very black and white mentality of like, you're either doing this perfectly or you're not, that it can be like quite harmful. Now, to reel it back to my family, I've been very, I don't know the right word. I don't want to say lucky because I don't think that's like the right word, but like happy that my parent, like my family is overall like an older demographic. So a lot of them aren't paying attention to me, or they don't even know how to, you know what I mean? Like they don't even know. I do have a very close relationship, and I had a pretty close relationship with my father when he was alive, with my mom. Now that they're separated and the situation is like was better. So my mother like knew everything before I started to really openly post about it. I didn't want to blindside her completely. My father died about a year and a half ago, and there's like two things that I never told him. And I always wonder if he knew because it was posted on the internet. But yeah, and then the rest of my family, like, I don't give a shit. Like, they're so opposite to me. Like, they're very conservative, like, individualistic, like, only really caring about them and their family. And, like, their immediate family, like, not me. Yeah. And I just don't care what they think. So, like, what are they going to tell me? They suffered in their little town that they never left? Okay, cool. Like, no offense to them, but, like, at the same time, I don't know. Anyways, we can't, you got me going now. So I'm going to just end this answer right now.
No, it's a fantastic answer. And yeah, that idea of black and white, the idea of people believing like you've got it 100% right or 100% wrong, is that's been really in my forefront of my brain, just in life in general, you know, just my perspective of the world and being a massive geek and overthinking everything. And yeah, so that deeply resonates and completely, I like wholeheartedly agree about, yeah, just that ideology of even in a world where we celebrate non-binary in so many different aspects, and whether it's sexuality or gender, this idea of it's a spectrum, not just black or white. We still, in the internet age, this idea of you can be like on a scale, I described it in my own head as this idea of like if 100 was conservative, like the most conservative person ever, and 0 was like the most liberal person ever, you could be like 30 and the people at 100 would say you're a snowflake, you're soft, da 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 da, but then at 0 you could be like cancelable, or that's a word I've made up, but this idea of that you can be like close-minded and da 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 da, and it's like, well, the idea is that most things are a spectrum in life. So, yeah, they're not completely one way or the other. So, yeah, my that's me mini ranting, but the idea of...
I love it.
Yeah, something that I completely agree with. And, yeah, just really interesting to hear that answer. One thing that I found really interesting was, so you am I right in saying, this is all wild assumptions, so please correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
a one-year stint in Nova Scotia at university and then moving to Australia. Can you provide context around that period of your life and just what was happening? as much as you wish to do so, but yeah, can you just provide like a bit of insight around maybe the transition, what leads to deciding to go, nope, leaving Nova Scotia, I'm going to Australia, because it's obviously just such a, from the outside, it's such a big change and a massive decision, I'd assume. But yeah, can you provide some like insight into what was happening with Amy at that time in your life?
Yes. So I'm going to give a synopsis really fast and then explain it. So Perfect. It was because of a boy.
Okay.
As annoying as that is, but right. It's actually way better than that. Okay. So this was the reason that I made, I know people can't see the video conversation we're having, but I made a face because every time I have to think about this period, which I think about it often, it's a really weird time because I've had so much like amazing experiences, but at the same time, like, I'm like, how did I not die?
Yeah.
So for me, it's just like, wow. So to build on like the childhood story about like why I was always sick. So now that I'm an adult and I can foresee like, or like go back and kind of assess what was happening. My family was very, very dysfunctional and very toxic. Mm-hmm. My father was from the ages of like when I was 10 to about 15, he gained over 300 pounds. Wow. Now, the reason I say that is because there's a lot of mental processes that are going on in a short period of time when you gain 300 pounds in 5 years.
Yeah.
So we can understand like kind of what's going on and what's happening. And unfortunately, because of that drastic like thing, he just like became horrible with himself, with me, with my mother. And because it was a smaller family and there was a very just like the triad dynamic, it was very like, it was just toxic is the best way to describe it. It was like me and my father were getting up my mom, like my parents were getting up on me and my mom were getting up on my dad, like just stuff that's like not how you operate as a human being. And because I know people in this community don't like this, but this is the best way to describe it. High functioning.
Yep.
I didn't alert a lot of people. So it was just like, oh, she's still doing great. Everything's fine. Like there was nothing that went off. So anyways, so I was 19 and I was at my boyfriend's house and my mom picks me up and I just remember her and her just staring, like turning to me and being like, your father left me. And like not knowing that like that was even an option, I guess. And then basically what happened is there was like fraud, there was infidelity, there was like embezzlement, there was like all these like really intense things that were going alongside the divorce / separation that don't normally happen when that goes down because my father was a business owner.
Sure.
Now, the problem is my mom also worked for my father. So you can imagine, and I'm also going to university. So it's like 2 days before I start university and all this is happening. A few weeks later, I find out that my boyfriend's cheating on me. So at the same time, my boyfriend's cheating on me while my father's cheating on my mother. Just like you can imagine what's going on.
Yep.
So eventually me and that guy, we ended things and I met a new guy who was also like a drug dealer. And I became an addict. Right time, right place, right mentality, really. So he had just gotten back from a year in Australia and he was talking about how amazing it was and like all the transformation that he had and like blah, 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 blah. And I just felt like if I didn't leave Nova Scotia, I would not like see the end of like my teenage years. I think I was maybe 20 when I left, but you know what I mean? I was not going to end up well. So my parents kind of like separately, but together, cause they were not together still or they never got back together. But anyways, they like pushed me on a, they basically were like, she's fucked. Like she needs to go somewhere to get like, to be like as a rehab almost.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I ended up going there. So yeah, he was talking like it was a boy because he had been to Australia, yeah. But I went by myself. So it wasn't like really because of him. But yeah, it was the craziest. So that was 2 years were like insane, but like really fun, which is the hardest part because you talk about how you have this like period of your life that like completely fucked you up, but you also had a good time doing it. So it's like,
yeah. And it's this, once again, it's that idea of you saying that not everything's black and white, right? That it was an overarching, I guess, not great experience, but nothing's 100% bad 100% of the time. So yeah, I can only imagine like the emotional kind of tanglement that comes with talking about a memory that is largely negative but still having maybe positive feelings wrapped in it all. And yeah, how that time in Australia, so the mindset is that Australia is, you know, a paradise where the great happens. The idea that, you know, I'm going to go to Australia and all my problems are going to be fixed. So can you speak to arriving in Australia and just what happened in Australia? Because I'm assuming, making a massive assumption, that not every single problem was solved once you got to Oz. Yeah, how were those early days when you emigrated? And I guess were you with the boyfriend or were you on your own at that point?
So landing in Australia, basically we had, so the guy and I had broken up because like my intention, we had only been together for a little bit. And we actually spent 3 months in South America together before I moved to Australia. Where I can summon up, I did a lot of cocaine. That's pretty much all I did. So when I went to Australia, I landed and it was like the day I left, he like called me when I was like on my way there and started to like verbally abuse me and psychologically abuse me because he was hurting from the breakup and that's all he knew how to do.
Yeah.
Like I recognize that now. So when I landed there, I was at like the deepest like moment of my life, or it felt like it at the time. And I just slept for 2 days. 2 days straight. I got on the plane. I passed out. I woke up 15 hours later. I was in Brisbane, which was like very lucky because that plane's that's a long flight. So like just woke up. I was there. And then I slept for like actually probably 72 hours. So 3 days. But I had a job to go to when I arrived. So I did the nanny au pair thing. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty good. Like the family was Canadian. So there was an easier like cultural thing, even though Australians and Canadians are like basically the exact same people. There was no cultural issue, but if there was to be one. So it was all great. It was wonderful. I remember being very happy, like landing there and feeling very like safe and like at home. But as you said, like, just because you run away from your problems don't mean they don't exist there. So that's really what the whole thing is that I was running. I just kept running and kept running. And I can tell you the 50 countries I've run to try to escape all of my mind.
Yeah.
So because of that, I do have these like not tainted experiences, but like the ones to be like, it's masked in mental illness. So like, it's kind of shitty that way, but yeah, it was a trip. That's pretty much it. It was a trip.
Yeah. Yeah. Just wildly interesting to hear that journey of early stage Australia. And I guess this date probably has a significant impact in your life, which is March 17th, 2011. So working at the time in the sex industry, an interaction with a client led to a light bulb shifting moment in your life. Can you speak to that client interaction and kind of what it set in motion for you personally in your life from that stage forward?
Absolutely. Okay. So I was a sex worker. To paint the picture, in Australia, it's legal. There are certain regulations, but it is completely legal. I had an Australian business number and everything. I was a happy endings massage girl, even though it's a woman, but you know.
Yeah.
And a stripper. So I was working in a private establishment, meaning that it was not, you weren't on a table and people weren't throwing bills at you. Sure. It was a one-on-one or one-on-two, sometimes one-on-five thing, like experience. Yeah. And it was like very, like, just to be very honest, like very pervy. Like it was a weird situation. But because I had been running from my problems, and I actually had a cancer scare when I was in Australia as well. So this was before this happened. Mm-hmm. My brain just, I didn't burn out so much, but I just like, I kind of gave up. So it was like the only job I could really, I didn't have to be present for it, I guess. Yeah. So I guess that's why it was easy for me to do. I also spent most of my younger life depersonalizing, which means that, like, I mean, there's so many different ways of explaining it. I'll just, like, I feel like I was literally separate from who I was, or I was like, it wasn't so much that I was like watching from outside my body, but I knew that it wasn't fully me in control of it, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So the last time I depersonalized was on this date. So knowing all of what I said about the sex work and things, I had a client that came in. So it was actually March 16th, okay. 2011. Oh, yeah. All good. Doesn't matter. March 16th. The only reason I know is because the day before it's St. Patrick's Day, because yeah. March 17th was like a really good day. But so March 16th, I had this client. It was an hour long massage, which was like very rare. They're mostly 15 minutes. Yeah. Very rare to have an hour, but a lot of money. Yeah. And because I, at that time, knew that I was leaving that job and I just wanted more money to go and travel more, to run away, you know, yeah. You can accept illegal tips. So what he wanted to do was he wanted to massage me. So I set boundaries. So I was like, okay, you can massage me, but nothing goes inside of me, which you listen to. But the problem, or like the significant moment of this, was that as he was doing this, he was talking to me like, this isn't who you are, Amy. Like you, this is not what you are meant to be doing. Like you are smarter than this. And I honestly, to this day, do not know if I made up what he said in my head, or if he actually came and said all this stuff to me.
Right.
Like, I know he was very much there and we were having these interactions. Like, it's not like I made that up. Yeah. But I don't know. I really don't know. I did start working with a therapist 2 years ago that specialized in sex work. And she did tell me that this is actually a very common practice. So I'm assuming it happened.
Sure.
But you never know.
Yeah.
So that was the day that I decided that, like, the way that I had been running was not going to cut it anymore. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of what happened afterwards in terms of what did the transition lead to after that kind of interaction?
Yeah, so it's so small and it seems so inconsequential when I tell you, but all it was is that the next day I didn't go to work. Mm-hmm. So I was never someone to like not just show up for a shift. And I remember them like calling me and being like, something's obviously wrong with you if you're not here. And it was like a holiday too. So, I mean, I don't know why they shouldn't put those two together, but holiday, but St. Patrick's Day. But because I didn't go to work, that was like the first time I really was like, this is a boundary I have. I'm not mentally able to. So that was like the very first time that I ever did that for myself. And then on March 17th, and this is just my luck. So I don't know how to explain this, but people that are damaged just flock to me. Right. Like, they know that I am going to help them. They don't know consciously, but people just know. So the next day I was drunk as a skunk, and I was walking down the streets, like, in a safe space. And this other drunk guy came up to me and was like, I'm going to kill myself. And I'm just like, what? So anyways, I sit down, I have a kebab with him, which is like a delicious, like, rap for people that don't know what that is. And he, like, ends up punching a wall, like, in the middle of all this stuff. I end up having just a conversation with him. And he's like, nobody wants to talk to me. Nobody this, nobody that. And I just remember eventually, like, leaving him and being like, I hope you're okay. Like, but just know that, like, people want to, like, people do want to support you. It wasn't said as eloquently as I'm saying it now, sure, but, like, yeah. People want to support you. Like, you don't need to do this alone, kind of thing. And I just kind of feel like it seems ridiculous, and it seems like the last thing I need is to have that thrown at my way. But I've had like two or three really intense experiences in my life where I feel like I have been trying to have, this is where I'm going to sound a little odd, but I'm going to say it anywhere.
Yeah.
Where, like, God is trying to communicate with me.
Mm.
And I feel like that 2 days was one of those moments. And I heard it. It just took 10 years kind of to get to where I needed to be. It just took a while, you know? So.
Yeah, I would say spiritual. And so it doesn't sound odd to me. One thing I wanted to ask was, something that you've said before, which I found really interesting, and it's just something I want you to be open about, is that a lot of people, when starting the journey of sobriety, I think people often say that they're at rock bottom when it comes to, I was at rock bottom. That's when the kind of, I guess, elevation of either sobriety or just a transformational positive change in your life happens. But something you've mentioned is the idea of having this positive change in your life actually wasn't the end. It wasn't the, you know, the fairy tale of, you know, I had this rock bottom and then I just went straight up. And it's something I just want you to be as open as you're comfortable with being. But how did you find the idea of turning your life around and that actually not leading to, like, an immediate positive transformation and that you were just happy ever after? The idea of the subsequent psychotherapy actually became even more challenging, and how those early days weren't immediately positive, but you kind of stuck with the process of kind of turning your life around. So yeah, can you just be open about the idea of maybe what your expectations were, but also just the idea of making positive changes and not seeing positive results straight away, but sticking it out anyway?
So again, these are these, like, situations where I'm like, do I say lucky? But I don't feel like that's the appropriate word. But I am lucky to have discovered my mental illness, because it's like a lot of it went unchecked for so long. But to really start to know and advocate for myself before the onset of online, like, mental health stuff. I think had that happened, I would have been really overwhelmed, because there are a lot of people who are on this journey that haven't maybe been experiencing it as long of a time as other people, and they haven't experienced the fact that there's multiple rock bottoms yet.
Yeah.
So they paint this photo, this, like, photo slash picture of this, like, beautiful, like, and now everything's fine. Right. And you're like, yeah, it is for a bit in certain areas of your life. And then that's going to create change in another area. Then that's going to create change in another area, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, and, like, sometimes that change, although, as, like, as you said, it does end up at the end game as, like, overall positive. Mm-hmm. But in the immediate, it's sometimes slash most of the time not. Mm. And this is going to come back to, like, the either or mentality that's, like, plaguing our world. And it's actually something I wrote about today in my, like, master's class.
Ooh.
Was that, like, we have been conditioned through, and yes, I'm going to throw it around, white supremacy, which of, like, it is us and it is the other.
Yeah.
And that permeates our world in so many areas. And unfortunately, it does that within ourselves. So because of that, like, duality in our bodies and in our mindsets, we end up starting to attack parts of us that we, like, not physically, obviously, well, sometimes physically, but most of the time not physically, but we end up attacking parts of ourselves and creating more shame and more, like, disgust and more self-loathing and more harmful actions towards us, because we are now conscious of what's going on, but we come at it with a judgmental perspective, because that is what is being told to us through marketing and through, like, social media. So it is really difficult to, like, for me to, like, to take up space online in a way that can be like, it's gonna suck and it's gonna be hard and you're not gonna be better tomorrow and it might take 30 years, but, like, it's better than nothing because it's not tangible. Yeah. And, but it's true though, because we really have to start breaking down this, that binary that exists. And we are doing it slowly through, like, certain avenues, like, you know, gender is something, sexuality, because I'm, you know, they're all the things. So it's just really, I wish it were that easy. Like, I wish, but that's not reality.
No. So. Yeah. And it, I think one reason, one big reason is that they really stuck out to me, you saying that now, but also explaining it previously, was I think back to my therapy experience and it was fairly similar in that sense. The idea that you go there and think everything's going to be great straight away. And it actually is, yeah, you're unpacking things that, like, for me, I hadn't even thought of. And I was like, fucking hell, it just feels like I've inherited more problems. There was almost value in the blissful ignorance, or at least I thought so at the time. And then, yeah, once you start to process these things, which are very challenging at the beginning, it's, you end up realizing, like, oh, okay, right, this is way for the better of me as a human being long term. But the idea of in the short term is like, oh, this sucks.
Absolutely. And I think the problem with that really is that, like, that's what we've been conditioned to run away from, like, that slight inconvenience. So it's so much easier now to, like, relapse. And, like, I don't mean that in just addiction. I mean that in everything, like, even just thinking. So easy, because we have all these amazing tools to help us do it. So, yeah, it's like, ignorance is bliss is a cliche saying, because it is the most accurate saying that exists.
Yeah.
And then to just add to it a little more is, like, once you get to this level of awareness within yourself, then you start expanding and realizing how that interacts with the community, and then on the world, and then your province or your state, and then you're like, your city, like, everything. And then it's just like, then it gets real fun. Yeah. But when you're focusing on yourself, there's some shadows for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. How did you find the process of reframing potentially memories from your life and experiences, but also breaking the shackles from negative self-identity in terms of these negative labels that we sometimes put on ourselves? And I'm saying on ourselves because it's something that I definitely do, actually. And then I feel like most human beings do, right? That we identify something negatively to ourselves, whether it's conscious or unconscious. But how did you find the idea of breaking the shackles of what those negative self-identities were? And then also, like, I'm going to personalize this for myself very quickly and then allow you to kind of say your piece on it. But I think going through therapy for me was this idea of I became a vastly different person over, like, a 3-year period, I feel like. And there becomes this idea of, like, I guess having to let go of a version of yourself that you've been so comfortable with for years because it's been your natural default state of being. And then obviously some people like you for potentially reasons that you're not a fan of, this idea of, you know, I was a big drinker and a very binge like drinker and, you know, very, you know, 0 to 100 drinker. So go out and just go super hard. And then by the age of like 24, and I've been an embarrassment on nights out, whether it's work nights out with friends, I've had to like break an identity of like, yeah, I drink really hard. And I've had to learn to like build a healthier relationship with alcohol. And I think what that leads to is, oh, it used to be so much fun. And then having to like reframe that and be like, no, but it was self-destructive. So I'm internalizing that briefly because it maybe gives a better idea of the actual question I'm asking. But how do you find the idea of breaking those negative self-identities and then gaining comfort with the idea of you becoming almost a different version of who you are as a person?
Yeah, so I'm going to share, I don't know if I've shared this on like the internet yet, so exclusive. No, I'm just kidding. So I am currently battling to talk, I can't remember if this was while we were recording or before, but I'm currently, we'll say battling with my weed usage. Mm. Now I am 31 and I have smoked weed since I was 15 and I have used it as a coping mechanism since I was 15. It did not, I mean, we could say it started off as fun, but I started smoking weed by myself when I was 15. And for everybody that knows about that, it's like the parents warned the people about these kids, you know? Yeah. So I've always been the stoner, or I've been the burnout, or I've been like the wacky, like hippie girl or whatever. And it's funny because like, if you know me, it doesn't match my personality at all because I'm very anal in particular and I'm trying to lean into a more like B type personality, but it's hard for me. I'm so neurotic sometimes. But because it's something that I've known for such a long period of time and it's something that has brought me so much comfort and has also held me through really hard times that it's so ridiculous. Like I really do believe that marijuana can be a medicine for a lot of people. Mm. It also helped me stop depersonalizing. Now I'm not suggesting this for anybody. This is not medical advice. I think I'm the only person in the world that this has happened to. So please don't listen to me about this. Is that it stopped me from depersonalizing, which is a huge thing. And because I was able to be, because of all of this, I have a really hard time not having that identity. And like, there are some limitations to it. It really affects my focus. And like what I want to do requires intense focus. Mm. So I'm in this struggle of like, okay, this has been your comfort. This has been your coping mechanism. This has been like everything that you have. Like, I don't, again, this sounds like I'm a drug addict, but well, some people will label it as this, but anyways, like I view it and I'm like, without it, I would not be here. Mm. Yeah. But I know intellectually that it's not serving me anymore. So I am in this battle of being like nurturing the hurt self that is still so clinging to that identity and being the more adult self that allows me to have discipline and responsibility in my own life. So like, because I also come from a very either that, like either or sorry, all or nothing mentality, like to me, it's like, I'm not going to have weed again. Whereas if I just smoked like once a day, that would be fine. You know, I would be okay. So yeah, like we do this a lot, but it's like the comfort zone. So like, for instance, this started way before that. Before it was just saying yes to everything. So because I felt like that made people like me because I had a self-worth issues. So eventually I stopped saying that. It was very uncomfortable. It was scary. It was part of my identity that I was the pleaser. But once I finally stopped doing that, it was really good and it was awesome and I felt really great. And then another comfort zone thing happened. And it was like, I don't know, like I have trouble communicating when you've hurt me. So before I was just saying no, but now I have to learn to communicate this. So it's just, as you said, like it's you, it's like that pass the present around game. You unwrap it once And then it goes around the circle, and then you have to do it again. And eventually, you do get the prize. I mean, I've not got there, and I don't know if I will get there, but, like, the prize is coming. But you are getting closer, and it's not as heavy anymore. And it's, you know, you're getting a little tired because the game's been going on for a long time. But it is, like, you are seeing your progress. So that's my very long answer to that question.
No. I love it. I love it. That was perfect. Yeah, I'm just a big fan of that answer, and my head goes to many different places, but I was wondering if you can, we can get back, I guess, to your story, the actual timeline of it.
Sure, yeah.
What did life look like when you were on your way back to Canada, and how were those early days of kind of season two, round two of Amy in Canada again?
Yeah, so I left out some information. So that day where it was like really like where I was depersonalizing, blah, blah, blah. At that time, I had the intention of I was going and traveling, but I had the intention of coming back and like illegally getting Australian citizenship because the people I worked for could do that. Yeah. And like I was going to basically sell my soul to move to Australia. Yeah. Not my soul, but you know. Yeah. And because that day changed that decision and I wasn't going to do that anymore, I decided to go back to school. So that's what brought me back to Canada, was I was going to go to school. And I had, before my parents separated, before all of this, we started talking about in this story more or less, I originally was going to go to school in the same city that I ended up going to school in 3 years later, sure. If that makes, or two years later, whatever it was. Yeah. So it felt very like synchronistic. It felt like, okay, you needed a 3 year or like a 2 year lap and then I come back. Different school, same city, different yeah. school, same city. So unfortunately I realized that I couldn't run physically or geographically anymore. Mm. So I needed to figure out how to run in other ways. Yeah. And that was through finding a relationship. So I had been single since the guy that I had influenced me to go to Australia. Mm. And I was like, all right, this is the toxic mentality. Everything's fine. I made the decision. Everything's going to be good. I'm going to be great. And then the first person I meet didn't even really like know the guy. And I was like, this guy's going to be my boyfriend. So basically I like ended up experiencing a lot of codependency, which is very common in like obsessive addiction, like people with like addiction behaviors and things like that. It's an addiction to love. And I mean, let me tell you, there is nothing stronger than the codependent high. Mm-hmm. I have done a lot of stuff and I can tell you that is the strongest drug that exists. Okay. But yeah, so that was kind of how it was. Somehow I held it together in school. Like I did fine. I have no idea, but that was kind of the early days.
One thing that you did right, once again, massive assumption, but I think it was for over 4 years, but you're a virtual assistant. How did you find that idea?
It was.
Right, good. I'm glad I got that right. How did you find working for entrepreneurs and that mindset we think it's more common than it is, but it is a very different mindset of a human being. How did you find working with entrepreneurs in that capacity? And what did you learn over that 4 year period of working as a virtual assistant?
So I didn't even realize this until like after my dad died, which is just so funny. My whole family is entrepreneurs. Right. I was like, cause you think of like the new trendy entrepreneur, like, you know, like the Instagram, like in the jet, obviously that's not everybody, but like that kind of idea. And then I realized, oh, my family have been entrepreneurs before it was cool. Right. So I think I just gravitated there because it is a very specific type of personality. There is a level of rebelliousness and rebellion that some people don't like. It's just too much. I love it. I'm like, yes, let's do this. yeah. So I was working as a virtual assistant and I was working in the self-help industry. So that was the catalyst, well, another catalyst for me really diving deep into my personal development and my like therapy and all that stuff. Because for anyone who's never built a business or anything similar, brand, whatever, it's hard. And the best way for me to describe it is this quote from this guy that I know. And he's like, being an entrepreneur is the fast track of personal development. So essentially, if you want to transcend your limiting beliefs, this is all jargon that you'll hear in this industry, limiting beliefs and like self-sabotaging behaviors and all the things that keep you stuck and comfortable. Yeah, you got to do all this stuff. So anyway, sorry, I got sidetracked for a second. Which is great, but the problem with it is that a lot of the people are teaching and not doing. Mm. So it was very out of integrity for me. Now, my client that I had like right before I quit was like pretty great. She was in integrity. She was like everything she was doing, but she was not doing self-help stuff. She was doing business. So it was a little different because there wasn't as much like be kind and all that stuff. But yeah, it really just weighed on me. And it's actually the reason that I left is because what I noticed is for the people that couldn't do things. So like if you bought a course and you didn't succeed, if you did this and like, why didn't it happen? I was fascinated with that because like some of these courses are thousands and thousands of dollars. And it's like, okay, what's going on that you've just invested $5,000 in this and you're not showing up. And I say that because I've done similar things. So I'm like, you're my people. We're sick mentally. Let's figure this out. So like, I just really wanted to be able to help those people because I knew that there was so much shame and distrust of myself, because it's like you have all these like really big hopes and dreams, and then when it comes to action, it's scary and you can't do it because of many things that happened probably in your childhood or like from severe trauma and things like that. So I learned a lot. I also a lot of business. I feel like I learned more about business than I would have had I taken a marketing degree, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is very cool. And one thing that I'm always intrigued by, this is scratching an itch of mine and a kind of self-belief of mine of the world, but you also helped a lot of other virtual assistants with their businesses as well as kind of focusing on your own business. How important was it for you to provide a collaborative element with your work?
Yeah, it was super important. For me, it's just an extension of what I just said. Like I wasn't before when I was a virtual assistant, I was helping them, but I wasn't helping them in the way that I wanted to. Like I wanted to be able to help them process and heal and all that jazz. So doing that from a virtual assistant perspective was very good because there is a large element of mindset. Obviously it's the world. But I did focus on that. So I did like that part of it, but like, I'll be real honest with you. The part I didn't like was the fact that everything changes all the time when it comes to like strategy and like all that. So I just like, didn't like having to keep up with that. Cause I was like, it's not my zone of genius. So it was like, I need to get into a space where I can just be in that. And that's why I like did close my business down. I mean, a lot happened and like, it wasn't as easy as a decision as I make it sound, but in retrospect, that's what I perceive it as now.
Yeah. Yeah. And, let's talk about that because you've now set up your own business. Can you speak to the work that you do now and yeah, what the mission is, what's kind of the everyday mission for Amy in business now?
Yeah. So I do two main things. One of them, well, both of them have taken a hiatus because I had a personal thing happen earlier this year. And just another one that I'm not quite ready to talk about.
Yeah.
But what I'm doing is I have the empathy front, which is something that is geared towards more younger adults. So I say adults, but they're all really children in my eyes. I'm still a big kid, so I don't really say I'm an adult, but like basically like 15 to 25. Cool. So you're in the latter years of secondary school, you're going to uni or college or whatever. It's a very big transitional time. There's not enough support from a mental health perspective, other than through like traditional government avenues, although we're getting much better now. And I just want to be able to offer that locally. So my focus is to, I mean, not right now, it's kind of on hold because COVID shot everything for a loop.
Sure.
But my focus is in set, like in classroom, in school assemblies and teachings, and also workshops that help them with things that mental health or affects your mental health. So not just like, here's how to create positive coping mechanisms, or here's how to set a smart goal or whatever. It's also like, here's how to budget. Here's how to like figure this out, because, you know, we've all seen the memes, like, where the fuck was this in school? Nobody taught us that. But where is it? And if we're all still talking about it, there's ways that we can supplement that into schooling and things like that. So that's the one thing that I'm doing. And that's more like a collaborative, like, I'm there and I'm the face of it because I'm the founder. But like the long-term plan is to kind of create like a community of people. So the empathy front is actually supposed to be the empathy front line. Ooh. So it's like the front line of the mental health, like the war on mental health, whatever. It does take explaining. So some people are like, what? But so like, that's why I want to grow community. From a personal perspective, or like my own personal business, I am becoming a certified counselor. Ooh. Because I don't want to deal with the red tape in Canada. Mm. Also, I am going to be focusing on psychedelic assisted therapy. Ooh. It's becoming, it's like very close to being legal in Canada. And like in the next few years, it's 1,000,000,000% going to be offered. Yeah. And although I am going to be focused, I'm going to be focusing on it as a whole, because it is, some people need a little bit more and they aren't comfortable with like certain types of therapies. Mm. I've been there. Like, I don't know how people are just like, if you were like, hey, Amy, you have a lot of trauma, you should do psychedelics, I'd be like, under no circumstances am I going to do that. But now that I understand it more, like, I do get how it's beneficial. So that's like my two light projects, you know, just very simple. But that's where I'm going. I am like very energetic. And because I have slowly stripped away the things that cause me to like derail my focus and procrastination and all that stuff, like, I got a lot of energy and I got to put it someplace. So I got those two projects going on.
I love it. I love it. It's absolutely fantastic. So one way that I found you was through your podcast, which is what we're not talking about. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to, because it's not your introduction to podcasting, and you had a very, from what I saw, a very professionally led podcast. So
thank you.
No worries. How have you found going from a very professionally focused podcast to now what you're doing with What We're Not Talking About, which is delving into more personal topics, delving into more, more personal, more, I mean, that's actually probably summed up pretty well, the idea of just like it being more personal and topics that affect us as human beings more so. How have you found that transition, and what have you enjoyed about the podcasting journey for you personally?
Great questions. I love the transition. It felt so natural, so me. I knew that because I would do mindset and psychology based like episodes in the previous one. And it's just like, I was the most engaged. I cared about it. And like, the reality is that like, there's so many business specific podcasts that like, it wasn't my passion. So I was like, you know what, let someone that really enjoys this take this back, like take this over and let me try something else. Yeah. So I like fell in love with like my brand of What We're Not Talking About and all this stuff. And I just like absolutely adored it. And then I had like a huge, like I had like very, a lot of really intense life things that hit me like in succession, and my identity completely changed. So I still love talking about everything about what we're not talking about, but that whole like brand and how it's like set up is like not me anymore. So it's really fun to watch. I basically feel like I watch my identities in my podcast because I'm actually starting a third podcast. So it's like, yeah, because I just don't think that it's like, it doesn't align with me anymore. So
yeah,
I love it though. Like it's fun. It's a great way to like communicate and like, you know, be in conversation with amazing people like yourself.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And I really truly believe that these conversations are changing the world. Even if you and I are the only two people that listen to this, you are healing through this. I am healing through this. And even just in that moment, and it could be minuscule, but because of that, it's just growing and growing and growing. And I believe that like, be the change you want to see in the world. I want to see us talk unabashedly about all these things without judgment and just observation and understanding. So podcasting really lets you do that. So yeah, that's my answer.
Yeah. And I completely agree. Very excited to hear about the third podcast when that comes around. Yeah, so I'll be keeping my eyes posted for that. Right, Amy, this is the part before the final four questions where you shamelessly plug everything you got going on and you say where people can find you. So, Amy, what have you got going on and where can people find you?
Oh my God, this will be the shortest plug ever. So everything's under construction. I'm like in hibernation mode, but you can find me on Instagram at amy.demone or at The Empathy Front. I manage both accounts by myself. So if you talk to me, it will be me.
Perfect. And anything that continues to evolve that Amy wants on the show notes currently lives there. So if you're not hearing it immediately, please just have a look and I'll update people on kind of what's going on in the life of Amy Demone. So, Amy, final four questions. These are questions that I ask every guest. They're more general rather than specific, but they're just questions that, being a nerd and having a podcast, I just love asking. So, the first question, Amy, if I was to give you a megaphone that spoke to the entire world and you could share one message, what would you pick?
I didn't think about this in advance.
That's fine.
And I'm going to just lead with what my heart is telling me. Use your damn signal. That's what I would tell the world.
I love it. I love it. Question number two. What's a personal struggle that you battle with that many people may not know about?
I bite my fingernails. And that is a sign of OCD. And it is something that for the first time I've had the ability to actually work on in over 25 years.
Okay. Number three, what are three personality traits / characteristics that you would say that you've built your life upon up to this point?
Rebellion, empathy, and adventure.
Oh, I like it. I like it. The final question. It's my favorite question that I get to ask. So, Amy, many years into the future, your time as Amy Demone is coming to an end. The person closest to you only has one sentence to describe you and your time here on Earth. What would you hope that would be?
What a fucking life.
I love it. That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Amy. I'm really appreciative of your time, your energy, and everything that you provided. I've loved this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. And thank you for this beautiful convo.
No problem at all. Everyone, please go check out the show notes and see what Amy's got going on. And yeah, please follow her story. I'm a very big fan of what she's building. So, goodbye, everyone.